This is Out of School, a podcast that exists between the intersection of technology and education. I'm Bradley, and tonight I am with a special guest. Normally, Fraser is with me, but we have a great show lined up tonight talking about something that we've really never talked about, not only disaster recovery, but also disaster prep. Our sponsor tonight is the great folks at Jamf Software, and they just newly announced Jamf 10, which we're really excited about. We'll get started with the show, and we'll talk about Jamf as we move along. So tonight we have a special guest. It's something that if you're in the U.S. especially, you come and following the story. We have Matthew Lanier. Is that correct pronunciation, Matthew?
Yes, and you can just call me Matt. That's fine.
Okay. Yeah, I get that a lot, too. People say it's Bradley, Brad. So it's like, I get that as well. So
I've been called worse.
It's true. My joke is always call me whatever you want. Just call me. So, Matt, tell us about the school you're at.
Well, I am the network administrator at a school district in Orange, Texas, which is basically the last stop on Interstate 10 before you hit Louisiana and Texas. We're on the southeast part. The school district I work at is called Orangefield Independent School District. We have about just shy of 1,800 students. And as you know, we just kind of went through Hurricane Harvey. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about tonight. So
1,800 students. Wow. So how many schools do you cover?
We actually have three campuses. We have an elementary, a junior high, and a high school is what we have.
Wow, that's a lot of students. You know, Fraser and I talk about things. I mean, obviously, we're on the low, number of students. We're on the low-end spectrum. So this week, for example, I've been moving some of our staff over to High Sierra. And it's interesting, how I approach that versus, someone that has 1,000 max, how they approach something like that. Because High Sierra is a sort of a complicated upgrade, certainly with APFS. And, gosh, it takes, so long to do that upgrade on a machine. And there's really, there's just not a good time to take a machine down for an hour. I was even thinking today, how do people with, 1,000 max do this? How do they get these things on the next OS? What is your device makeup primarily?
Well, we're mostly a window shop, unfortunately. I guess it has its advantages and disadvantages, really being Windows or Mac. But I do have Chromebooks and iPads, but for the most part, we're Windows, and we're in the process of basically moving everything to Windows 10 as far as anything that gets new or redone. So I will be experiencing an OS upgrade every 6 months, apparently. So not just once a year like High Sierra.
Well, it's my big thing with moving to High Sierra so quickly. It's not so much to do with High Sierra, but it's with the crack vulnerability that Fraser and I discussed in the last episode. A lot of our machines, I will, as I they come to me. I mean, so I guess I'll back up. So we're primarily, a lot of our infrastructure is related to the Google Apps Suite, G Suite as they call it, which I still think is a terrible name.
But oh yes, very terrible.
It's a terrible name. And RunWeb. And so so much of our teacher interaction is in those two products. So I'm never hardcore get on the latest OS. If you're on Sierra and it works fine, stick with it. If you're on LCAP and it works fine, stick with it. I'm not real hardcore about it. We have teachers that can always move on quickly, and I always let them know hey, it looks like everything we use is compatible. Feel free to move on if you'd like. And some teachers do and some teachers don't. And that's generally fine with me. But trying to get everybody patched for the crack vulnerability we discussed on episode 231, I feel I'm going to get everybody on High Sierra. And so when that software update launches, I can say, hey guys, please apply this quickly. It's kind of just in some ways it's a weird time, and I'm trying to, especially with APFS, I'm trying to more handle people through that. Because it is a very long upgrade. I'm kind of doing three machines at a time. And I literally did about half the teachers today. I somewhat miss the life of new software updates for the Mac every 18 months. I mean, those have been going for a couple of years. But it's hard because when you really feel the OS is stable enough to upgrade, like there's a new beta around the corner, so you already are starting to think about like the next year. And then you're like, okay, this is like lease refresh year, and so don't even worry about it because you're getting new machines in 6 months.
Yeah. Well, our thing is we always have to watch out because the state of Texas makes us take I know you teach it like a Christian private school or something mm-hmm. like that, so I don't know if Tennessee has like standardized testing or whatever that y'all have to follow, but we have to do it. And a lot of the times is we have to make sure that our OS is compatible with that. It's got to have the right version of Java or Flash or whatever other nonsense that these education software people that they gouge the people for money, what the requirements are. And they're usually so far behind in everything. And it's like when Adobe finally kills off Flash, I don't know what we're going to do.
I actually cannot wait for that. Like it is sooner than you think. What is it, 2020 is when they're killing it off?
I think so.
I was thinking about that because we have like this app we or like a service we use in our kindergarten and first grade. It's called Children's Progress, and they don't have a native iPhone app. It's a Flash-based kind of interface, and I ended up like deploying the Puffin browser. The phrase I've talked about that. Like I've got the pro version of that. It's been like $130 to like get it deployed, and it really actually worked well. Surprisingly enough, like it actually did work well. And like I was even thinking, like we were talking to our academic staff, and it was like, what are these companies going to do in like 3 years when like this stuff is not only like it's out of date, but like it's end of life. I mean, it's literally end of life in 3 years.
What I've noticed is I've been in education for I guess about 9 years now, and I've noticed that like education software companies, they're never really in a big hurry to upgrade anything. And so I think come 2020, I think we're going to have a real big problem on our hands. It's already starting to be a problem because we run some credit recovery application, which is online based called Plato. And I've actually had to go in with the group policy settings. I know y'all don't talk a lot about group policy because mainly are an Apple-based podcast, but group policy allows you to basically kind of do the things that like Jamf lets you do with Macs as far as controlling different kinds of settings or whatever. Well, Google has provided some Active Directory and group policy tie-ins to be able to manage the Chrome browser, and I've actually had to go in and set Flash to allow to run on everything by group policy just to make sure that this credit recovery application can work.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Like for all, it's like it's a double-edged sword because Chrome having Flash built in has made it so nice on one hand because it is always up to date. You don't have to worry about a separate plugin, but then you are kind of limited to what like Google's interpretation of how Flash should be used. Obviously, like this stuff should just die. I mean, like clearly this stuff should just die in a fire, and we can all as EdTech IT administrators like just clearly have a great night because plugins are just like the worst thing. I mean, they really are the worst thing. Like it just especially like I felt like we were like struggling in 2010 with this stuff, and I feel like in 2017 like we should be past this, but I don't know. I mean, we keep still giving these companies our money, and so I don't know what are we going to do. But I do, like you said, think 2020 is going to be a year where a lot of these companies are going to be hurt. Like I hope they're planning today because a key aspect of their business is going to be cut off essentially, and all it's going to take is a major version of Chrome saying no more, and these guys are out of business in some sense.
Exactly. And I'm ready for the day because Flash, Java, I mean, I know whenever I quit natively installing Flash for it to run in Safari, I know that my Mac's RAM just sort of took a sigh of relief. And so same thing when it comes to Java. It's just the computer's going to run better. I mean, obviously, without having to load all those memory hogging programs. So I look forward to the day where the web isn't so dependent on this stuff.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think it's better for us all. But nevertheless, and so the reason we wanted to talk tonight, we're talking late at night for both of us, is to talk about the hurricane. And so we hear a lot in the news about disaster recovery. And like we as our community went through this a little bit back in 2011. We had a multiple F5 tornadoes kind of come through our area. We thankfully weren't impacted dramatically. Like, we were without power for about a week. And it's when my kind of cloud first strategy really paid off, because we were able to like operationally still function, like payroll could still happen. Obviously not happening on campus, but like it's 100% cloud first, and we could get really take a computer anywhere and operate. And I know some school districts near us though weren't as lucky. And I had lunch with one of their IT directors here recently, and we were talking about that. Like, he mentioned like I had the servers in the back of my truck, and we were taking them to have them relocated so we could get services back up. And so obviously, like, that's a whole different business. But the part of your story that I am very interested in is disaster preparation, because you guys knew this hurricane was coming days in advance. So take us back to like when you realized like this was for real and we have to get into preparation mode.
Well, down here in Texas and along the coast or whatever, we know hurricanes are coming, but a lot of times you really don't know how bad it's going to be until it actually gets here. Like before Harvey, we actually had another tropical storm come through called Cindy. And Cindy was supposed to be a direct hit in our area, and it ended up like fizzling out right before it hit. And what the thing about Harvey was, Harvey really wasn't supposed to hit us. And so we weren't, Harvey actually hit Houston the first day of school, or first day we were supposed to have school. And it went into Rockport and Corpus Christi, and then it swung up to Houston. Well, then what it actually did was it actually came back into the Gulf and then came back and hit us as a tropical storm. And it actually got caught in between two other like high pressure systems, and so it just really had nowhere to go. And so when it actually hit us, it was actually a tropical storm, not even a hurricane, but it was just stuck in between those high pressures, and it just dumped like 55 to 60 inches of rain, depending on what part of the area you were from. And so, yes, we knew it was coming, but we really had no idea how bad it was going to be, or that it was going to get stalled or anything. I mean, because it was just so unpredictable as far as its path. And even the local weather people or whatever, they basically even said, like, we blew it on this. I mean, we totally did not call this like it was supposed to be called. And so, but for the most part, a lot of times we do have at least 3 to 5 days preparation that it's going to hit. And so, and then you're juggling that balance is, okay, well, I got to get things ready at the school, and then also have to get things ready at home. And if we need to evacuate my family, on top of like, what do I need to do for the school prep? But I guess the only thing that is the most important thing that you can do as far as disaster prep, especially when you're in like situations like you, and we are too, where our student information system and our finance software and stuff is all hosted on the cloud. That is like the most important thing. And so I really wasn't too worried about that stuff, because it was going to stay up. That stuff is actually hosted, I think, in San Antonio for us. And so, which was not really, I mean, because kind of the storm kind of went into almost all the way to San Antonio, the Austin area, and then came back out. So, I mean, they probably got a little bit of wind and rain, but it was a lot more secure than if it was in our area. But other than that, just make sure your backups are there, whether they're on site or somewhere else. And if they are on site, make sure you grab those backup drives if you decide to take off. And if you want to take your gear, take your gear. But, you know, as long as you have your backups, everything else can be replaced. And that was kind of our thinking, is I just made sure that the backups were up to date, and I just made sure that I watched that basically as long as I had power and internet at the house that I could kind of remote in and check. The school never lost power, even with water inside the buildings after it came back and hit our area. The school never lost power, and so that was kind of amazing. But yeah, we just made sure that our backups were up to were good to go. And that's really, I mean, really, that's all you can do. I mean, to me, I'm more worried about my family and my stuff, as opposed to making sure that I've got room in the car for some network gear or whatever, because all that can be replaced. Me and my family can't be. And so, I mean, as long as my backups are good, I'm good with rolling with whatever happens.
So, you know, that's funny. Not funny you say that, but my in-laws, next door neighbor, his house was destroyed in those tornadoes that came through. And the only reason they weren't at home was because he was at school shutting things down. And that's the part we kind of forget about these disaster recovery and disaster preparation situations. Like, these are people that are like real people as well. Like, these aren't just robots who manage our IT. Like, these are people with families and kids, and they could kind of, at the end of the day, this isn't their livelihood. I mean, it's their livelihood, but it's not what they, it's not their primary focus. It's making sure their family's safe. And it's the power situation, I think, is in some ways more critical than the internet infrastructure, because if the internet infrastructure dies, if these servers can retain power, they're not having to be shut down improperly, I think that's certainly huge. But the cloud first strategy, like you guys are at, where that just takes the pressure off of you, because you don't feel like you're going to lose critical data. I mean, there's, you know, it's like you're paying for that turnkey operation, so you don't have to deal with that in a situation like this. Because obviously, you guys being where you're at, it's not a matter of if you're going to have a hurricane hit you. It's really a matter of when. And so you kind of have to go into it planning for that. When you guys realized the hurricane was on your path, do you have conversations with your vendors, or is it just assumed that they're prepared for the event you guys don't have access or don't have power and data for a foreseeable future?
Well, I mean, since the student information system and the finance stuff, that's all hosted somewhere else, I mean, we weren't really worried about losing access to that. And that's really our only main vendor that we have stuff cloud hosted. Everything else is probably like way far off. And so we weren't really too concerned about being able to access anything, because it's all accessible over the internet, no matter where they're at. Key employees have Verizon MiFi cards, or MiFi hotspots, rather. I'm thinking back, you mentioned like 2010, 2012. I'm thinking the old little cards you'd plug in. But so a lot of the key personnel that need them to be able to access those things and to get payroll out and do those sort of stuff, they have access to those Verizon hotspots. So as long as the cell tower infrastructure can stay up and going, we'll be able to get to the important things that we need as far as making sure bills get paid, people get paid, make sure student data is protected and all that other stuff that you have to worry about. Worst case scenario, if the whole place would have just been demolished, I would have been rebuilding my Windows domain from scratch, and that's really it. I mean, that was probably worst case scenario. Everybody's like home directories and all those important files, they were all backed up to the cloud with our backup solution, and so it would just be a matter of replacing equipment, rebuilding everything from the ground up, and then restoring that data. So, I mean, we were prepared as much as we could be prepared for. I mean, the only other way we could be more prepared was if we had like a whole nother virtualization environment that we have. If we had that replicated at some other offsite location, but there's just not the funding for that. So we just have to make do with the tools that we can afford to do and do the best we can.
Well, yeah, because what you're looking at, if that is a total loss, like you can. It's not like data is going to be lost. It's going to be more legwork for you to rebuild it, but it's not like you're going to really lose key data. You know, one of the things for me that was really important was the ability to process payroll, because we kind of think about our email and our SIS being like key, but ultimately people like want to get paid and have to get paid to pay their bills. And so being able to make sure payroll is processed on a timely manner, it's not as simple as like being able to, you know, pull out a checkbook ledger and write checks. Like, you know, you have to know how these things kind of flow. That was certainly big for us. And so you guys know this are coming, it hits. Do you, in some ways, as an IT administrator, just like when this thing hits and you realize, okay, this is very serious, it's hanging around, do you just like, I guess as a dad and as a husband, just shut off your IT administrator role and realize once this thing passes, we'll just rebuild the best we can? Or does your mind kind of always think back to the network and making sure, like, you know, wondering how it's doing?
It's kind of a combination of both. But first and foremost, I need to make sure that my family is taken care of first. But the thought of like, am I even going to have a school or a network and all that other stuff to go back to is always like a function or always the thought in your mind. And so, I mean, it's kind of, and it's like I said, you're kind of torn between the two things. It's like, you know, your family comes first, but you know that what you do, you would like to think what you do is important, because like you said, people have to get paid, stuff has to be, I mean, school has to go on. I mean, we had a bad flood, but over in India about the same time that Harvey was going on, I mean, India was having some real bad floods too. And it's like thousands of people were losing their homes and their lives. And so when you think about it on that scale or whatever, but I read an article where they said that schools are one of the first things that they want to get back up and operational, kind of like hospitals and stuff like that, because if you don't get the kids back in schools, there's a good chance that they just won't go back. And so we looked at it from a standpoint that, like, as our community is mainly a community where people go and live. There's not a whole lot of industry in our community. So there's no like jobs. I mean, the main employer in the Orangefield area is the school district. And so the thought is that we have to get back and make sure that the school's up and going so that people have a reason to come home and rebuild their houses in their lives and stay in this area. Because I don't know how it is in Tennessee, but school funding is based on the number of students that you have actually show up for school every day. And so we have to give people a reason to come home so that we can continue to give these people their jobs and their livelihoods and stuff like that. And so that's always a thought in the back of your mind too. It's like, okay, my family's safe, but is there anything that I can do to help the school get back up and going or make sure that everything's okay?
Yeah, I mean,
does that make sense?
Oh no, it totally does. I mean, it's obviously, I think most schools are funded, public schools are funded that way, where it's like a per day, per student kind of ratio, and you're funded based on how many kids you could have there on average, and you do in school being back in session does bring that sense of normalcy back to life in a way. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the kids can go to school, the parents can start looking at how their jobs are shaking out.
And it may seem kind of trivial too, but one of our priorities was, I mean, we're from Texas, obviously. So one of our priorities was how soon can we have, and I know this may sound trivial and some people may not understand it, but if you're from the South, like we are, you'll understand it. But how soon can we get the football kids on the field? I mean, that was like one of our priorities. How soon can we get the football team to come back practicing? Just because, I mean, the community needs that, because Friday Night Lights, I mean, it was a great TV show, but it is real life in Texas. I mean, that is, Friday Night Lights are an important thing. And so that's what's going to help bring the community together. And like you said, it brings that sense of normalcy. And so that, I mean, it's things like that. It's like, what can we do to get, like you said, our lives back to, I mean, you may have 6 foot of water in your house and you may be living in a travel trailer, but your school's up and going and you can go watch a football game on Friday night.
Yeah, that was a great TV show. That was a great TV show.
Very good. You know, if Netflix is going to revive anything, why can't they just revive that?
It's a good show. Before we move on, let's thank our sponsor for tonight. It's the great folks at Jamf. Jamf Pro is the best solution for deploying, managing, and securing your Apple devices. Over 3 million students are empowered by Jamf every day. Bring learning to a whole new level for your students and your teachers by providing the tools they need to be successful in today's classroom. Start a free trial of Jamf at jamf.com. That's jamf.com. Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring Out of School this week. So, okay, so hurricanes hit. It's obviously very, very serious. It hangs around like unprecedented in a lot of ways. And then life gets back to normal slightly. You guys are starting to look to rebuilding. How do you communicate with the students that, like, hey, school starts on Tuesday?
Well, we used a combination of our website, social media, Facebook, Twitter, those sorts of things. And a lot of times, with it being sort of a small community, a lot of times word of mouth and just calling people and letting them know. I know that the principals, as soon as they could actually come to the school, the roads were drivable enough where they could get in. One of the tasks the superintendent gave the principals and assistant principals was to call every single staff member and check on them, check on their family, check on their house situation, see how things were, and just sort of like give them an update of things that are going on. And so, I mean, a lot of that kind of stuff went on. People just kind of calling each other, checking on each other, social media, Facebook, which I don't really understand how the Facebook was helpful, because I mean, my cell service was horrible during the hurricane, so I don't know how people were able to be able to keep up and check on those things, but they were. And a lot of times too, that's what the like the Orange County Emergency Management organization, that's how they would get information out, or the City of Orange or the City of Britt City or all these cities around us, is they would use Facebook and social media and the local radio station's website. They would use those sort of things to try to get information out, not just about school starting, but like where these points of distribution were, there was water and food and ice and stuff that people could go get to try to survive, I guess, this whole situation. So, I mean, that the social media plays a big part of it. In fact, I had just recently gotten rid of my Facebook account because I realized how much of a time drain it was, and so I actually had to create, and I have a hidden, a kind of a misnamed Facebook account, just so I could kind of follow these different organizations so that I could see those kinds of information. And so I hate that you have to use Facebook to get this information, but I'm glad that they're using Facebook. That's a good that is one of the things that I like about Facebook, is they can actually get this information out to a lot of people at one time.
So school starts, do you have students who have like devices that are damaged? I mean, like, what's your device makeup in terms of like, yeah, are these folks taking these devices home? Do you have stuff that's damaged? How are you assessing your current like kind of health of your device lineup?
Well, let's step back a little bit before school actually starts. Let's talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about the in-between time as far as like when we can get into the school to actually do things, and then whenever we determine that it is safe for students to return back to the buildings. We were, as a district, three of our buildings actually took on water. The entire elementary campus took on water, and then two of the buildings at the high school took on water. We were fortunate enough, unlike some of the schools in our area, that at most we got 4 inches of water, 4 to 5 inches of water in one of our buildings. And so, I mean, 4 to 5 inches of water doesn't seem like a lot, but you still have to cut your walls up 4 foot. I mean, because that's just how you handle sheetrock and stuff like that. So, but I won't bore anybody with the details as far as rebuilding a building goes. But as far as our technology goes, for the most part, the only thing really, unless it was actually sitting on the floor, which the one area where the most technology was sitting on the floor that we lost was actually in my office. So I feel kind of embarrassed about that. But we lost a few student computers. We lost a lot of power supplies to things, surge protectors. Obviously, we pulled out every single surge protector in all the buildings that flooded, and obviously we'll never trust those to plug them in again. Power adapters to like document cameras that we use, and computer speakers and stuff like that, where the power cable is actually built into the speaker itself. So the whole speaker system has to be trashed because the one little power cable got corroded and ruined. And so, I mean, from a technology standpoint, we were able to save a lot of stuff. But that being said, it was also sitting inside of a building that was full of water. I mean, not a whole lot of water, but it was still 4 inches of water across the whole building. And so there's moisture in the air and stuff like that. So 6 months to a year down the line, we may start opening up these computers and start finding rust. So, I mean, that's just a thing that we're going to have to deal with, I guess. But we did, we got into the buildings. The first thing that we did was go into the kindergarten wing of the elementary and start pulling out all the rugs. I mean, because those were things were nasty. And then when we finally got some organization as far as like what the remediation company needed us to do in order for them to get started working, we put a plan in place, and basically it was just go get all the technology out of the buildings. And so we hauled all of the computers out of the elementary and the two buildings at the high school, and we put them in these two portable buildings that we had at the junior high that didn't receive any damage. And so, and then we put some dehumidifiers in those buildings and just kind of let them run for the 2 to 3 weeks that we were actually after getting them out, actually before we started school. So we're hoping that those dehumidifiers actually took care of the moisture that may or may not have been in those computers and all that other technology, printers, things like that.
It's like a ticking time bomb in some ways. Like, it's like, I mean, I know that's, I don't know, like, if your role is, I mean, you mentioned your role is like network admin, so I don't know if like that's your job to stress about, but like, it's like if you get a phone that's like in water and you get it back up and running, like the back of your mind, you're thinking, gosh, this thing's got like, it's on its own. It's on its like, there's a time clock and this thing's going to die on me. And so that is tough to kind of deal with that because you know, like that building took on significant amount of water. Gosh, that's tough.
It is. Back in the last time that we had a big hurricane that actually did a lot of damage was back in 2008. And we actually, it was Hurricane Ike, and the water that actually flooded a lot of the area was actually pushed in from the Gulf of Mexico, so it was salt water. And so salt water causes a lot more damage than fresh water, just from it being the salt in it. But luckily, what may help us out is the fact that this was all fresh water, and so you may not have that salt corrosion that you might not have the corrosion that the salt water can cause pretty quick. Because I know, like, if I drive my truck or the car down to Galveston, which is like right on the Gulf of Mexico, that as soon as we get back into the area, we run that thing through a car wash to get that salt water off of it, because it's gonna do some damage to that car, and it's just a matter of time before it does it. And so, but we're thinking, with it being fresh water and then getting those dehumidifiers in there pretty quick, that I think everything's, I have a good feeling that everything's going to be okay. Well, at least I hope it is.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do? I mean, the damage is done if it's done. I mean, you're just going to have to adjust, you know, kind of react to it when it happens. And I'm sure it'll be a slow burn where it's like you're not going to have, you know, 30 devices fail on one day. It's going to be one here, one there, and it's easier kind of to deal with. So you get these dehumidifiers, clean these devices up. Take us along the story again. Like, where, you know, what's the next step for you guys?
Well, the next step obviously is you got to get the buildings cleaned up. And so that's when we bring in a remediation company, which basically comes in and cuts walls, cleans up water that's left over. We actually brought in some of our custodial staff and maintenance staff. And like I said, we were pulling rugs. And so basically we do what we get, you got to get the building clean, because then you have to do, like, you have to test for mold and all that other stuff, because the building has to be safe really before anybody can come in. And so not only did we have the dehumidifiers, in those portable buildings, we actually had these massive industrial size ones that were just basically just pumping in hot air into these buildings to get the thing dried out. And so you have to do that, and you have to do some prep work. And so actually, that is the point at which we actually went in and actually shut the network down, because all throughout this time the network was up and running, like server infrastructure, stuff like that. Everything was up and running. The water didn't get high enough. Everything's up in racks, and so there was no like significant server gear or network gear that actually got ruined or actually got water in it. So when they brought in these big machines, obviously they're going to pump hot air in, and network gear and server gear and hot air just really don't mix very well. And so at that point, we actually had to shut everything down, wrap it with tarps, because when they start cutting into the wall, to protect it from dust and stuff like that. And then that company came in, did its thing. And then when they were done, we were allowed to come back in and sort of like reassess as far as like what we needed to do at that point. And obviously the first thing we did was basically get the network back up and going, as far as getting the tarps from around the racks and getting the server gear back up and going and turning all that stuff back on. So
I guess it's like a breath of fresh air when you turn that stuff back on and it's like back up and running. You're like, okay, like we're okay. Like we're going to make it.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, please let this boot. And when everything boots like it's supposed to, it's just magic. it's a good feeling.
Was there any thought of like preemptive shutdown, like when this storm was coming? Because again, you mentioned like, you know, power issues. Like, is there any thought of just like, hey, let's just shut it all down before power goes out?
Well, there was, but like I mentioned, we weren't really expecting the heavy part of the storm. We were just, I mean, when it was coming back to our area, we were just expecting basically a little bit bigger thunderstorm. I mean, we'll get a thunderstorm out of nowhere. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, the old saying is, if you don't like the weather that's happening in Southeast Texas, just wait 10 minutes and it'll change. And so, so we weren't really expecting too much. It's just it's when that storm stalled and it just dumped that rain and that rain and that rain. The wind wasn't really that bad, and that's really where you run an issue into losing power, is because the wind knocks the power lines down, or trees into power lines, stuff like that. Now, the wind was pretty bad, but it wasn't as bad as like, say, when it hit Rockport and basically just wiped them off of the map pretty much. And so, because I mean, I think it went into Rockport with over 150 mile an hour winds, 160 mile an hour winds. I think the most we had was maybe in the 50s, I think. And so, but that could just be a normal thunderstorm for us. That air can spin up pretty quick. But you know that with tornadoes and stuff, that's sort of the same thing. And we actually saw some of those. Some tornadoes actually blew through too. And so,
You say that like so flippantly, like, oh yeah, we had some tornadoes. You know, it's like it's just chaotic in some ways. It had to be like, yeah, we had 4 inches of water in our building, and we had some tornadoes flowing through the area. But no, it's fine.
It's fine.
Everything is fine.
It's like that. It's that dog meme in the fire, right? Everything is fine.
It's fine.
The world's burning around you.
So you're rebooting the servers. School's been cleaned up. Day one, like, how does that, like, what does that look like? Like, school resumes. What does that look like from a technology perspective?
Well, from a technology perspective, it all started with, we can't go back into the elementary school. Where are we going to put those kids? That's kind of where it all starts with. And so once we get the plan out as far as where we're putting the kids, then it's like, okay, what technology can we put for that teacher where those kids are, to help them do their job? Now, when I was in, I think of it this way too. We want to do the best we can to give them the tools that they need to be an effective teacher and stuff like that. But what are the chances when they were in school, did they have projectors, document cameras, computers, and stuff like that? Teaching is possible without technology. And so it's hard. It's harder. And a lot of times it almost seems like it's impossible because most of the tools and stuff are online or some kind of like that. And so we were asking people to be patient with us. We're going to do what we can. But when you're having fifth grade kids being displaced out of their classrooms because they can handle being inside of a gym with tarp walls a little bit better than kindergarten kids can, there's really no feasible way that we could put a desktop in there for those teachers to use. And so we did the best we could with what we had. The teachers were great. I mean, I didn't really hear any complaints. The teachers that really needed the tools, like math teachers and stuff like that, we got them the things that they could actually do, the things that they needed to do. The teachers were troopers. They were great. The attitudes were great. And so after we got all these kids settled, we set up what we could, what we had, and a lot of it was, okay, we got all this technology from the high school and the elementary out of those buildings. Where can we put it, but also, like, do we have enough power supplies for this? Do we have enough power strips for this? And that was one of our biggest concerns, was that when we actually got back into the buildings in the high school, where we actually had to put 4 computer labs back in, I had no power strips at all. I mean, I had these computers, but I had some power cables, I had a few power strips, but there was no way I had enough to be able to hook all this stuff back up. And so that's when you start calling all your contacts, your vendors, your stuff like that, and you're like, hey, I'm in this situation, is there any way you can help me? And we were actually donated a whole bunch of stuff. An organization actually sent us 500 power cables for computers and monitors and printers and stuff. Energy Texas, the actual electricity provider, actually provided us over 100 power strips. And these just aren't the rinky-dink little six-prong power strips. I mean, these are like some high-quality surge protectors with built-in like ways to stop TVs from sucking up electricity when they're turned off. I mean, this is some good power strips. Home Depot came through for us. A local company called M&D Supply came through for us. A lot of people donated, knew that we were in need, and pulled together some resources and actually helped us out. And so we just basically got everything back in place that we could, that we had stuff for. The computer labs got back up and going. We could put teacher machines at. We did all that, and then they just come back to school, and you spend the first few days hearing everybody's Harvey stories and telling them it's going to be okay. And then you just got to do what you got to do. Because on top of all this, and I might could send you some links for your show notes. One of the things that we're working on right now is our superintendent and some superintendents from the area, they're working with TEA in the state of Texas to be like, hey, do we really need to take this standardized test this year? Because Texas is implementing this new school rating system. Basically, the schools are going to get a grade A through F, depending on how well the kids are going to do on the test. Well, there's only so well your kids are going to do on a test whenever there is – so we've lost 6 weeks of instructional time because of this already this year. I mean, we started school basically 6 weeks late. Well, it was actually like five and a half, but you might as well say there was no first 6 weeks. And so – and then our superintendent has said to all our teachers to don't give students homework, because – there's a good chance that kid's got no home to go home to do work at. And so we have to be mindful of those situations that those students are going with. So they're working with the state to try to be like, hey, I mean, is there any way that we can do away with this test? Because we know that it's going to be difficult for our teachers to be able to teach the kids everything that they need to know for the test. And that's a topic for a whole nother day about having to teach a test. But that's one of the things you have to consider, because there's another school that got hit worse a lot more than we did, and they're actually having school, I think, half a day's in a church education building. And so it's like the certain grade levels go for half the day, and then after they leave, another group comes in. And so they're only getting half day instructional time. And so those are some of the things you have to kind of be mindful of. And so that's kind of why they're working with the state as far as that test, because how much instruction time are you getting to prepare for this test on half a days, or if you're in a cafeteria with tarp walls? I mean, so, but the teachers are doing the best they can with what we got. For the most part now, we actually got the second building at the high school kind of functional. And so we've gotten pretty much everybody out of the tarp walls. And so we have everybody in a classroom for the most part. And so we're able to go back in now and put more technology in. And things are getting to a little bit back to normal. We've moved from the tarpateria and the tarpasium to the plywood palace is what I call it.
Plywood palace. That's great. well, and I think what you're talking about is really interesting, because there's like this model of like, particularly when you have state testing, of like how the school year should have gone and the reality. And I think being able to adapt to situations that are beyond anyone's control is important. And the teachers, like if any teacher I know is always in the best that they can and has exceeded expectations in these like kind of terrible situations. I mean, this is just, teaching is hard enough when all the factors are perfect, all the variables are good. And then you have a situation like this where your instruction time is cut down and everybody's distracted in a lot of ways. Yeah, it's you kind of got to have to like, okay, what are we going to do for this year? How are we going to rethink our testing strategy for this year? But I love hearing that like the community as a whole has kind of rallied around the school system. But what that means is they rallied around the students. And I think that's the reason we all do this is for the kids. As for the students is to help them kind of take the next step in life. And there's nothing... You know, we have like, when you hear from like, you know, kids that have graduated that were like, you know, graduated to your school and like they're doing well, like that gives you a sense of pride. And it, you want to give back to the place that gave so much to you in a sense. Like, I love hearing like, again, just like simple things of like, hey, the electrical company donated us 100 surge protectors. Like, that's awesome. Like, that's like something you don't think about, like that would be something you would need, but gosh, you do need like 100 surge protectors. Like, you've got to plug all this gear in and you don't have enough outlets on the wall. Like, we need a way to do that. And that is awesome. And I think that shows the value of just the community as a whole, like wherever you're at, like the community owning who you are and owning like the area you're in, like, hey, we're, you know, I'm a local business, but like, I love this area and we're going to support this area.
Well, I mean, and a lot of it too, it's like, these people, they live here, they work here. I mean, this, like you said, this is their community. They're going to support it. I mean, I hate that it happens, but disasters always bring out the best in people. A lot of times it brings out the worst in people too, but for the most part, the majority, it sort of brings out the best. And it's terrible that situations like it's because of situations like this, this is why it happens. Why can't everybody just be great to everybody all the time? I know that's like a big conversation in politics and in culture these days, but, it's kind of sad that it takes a situation like this to do that. But I mean, we have so many stories of people donating things, even staff members helping other staff members. We actually, my wife teaches pre-K at the same school district that I work at. And, she lost her, I mean, something as simple as, I mean, who would have thought a rug is important for teaching pre-K? Well, I mean, it kind of teaches structure and stuff like that. It's like she assigns us kids to sit in certain parts of those rugs. And so it teaches those kinds of things that the kids need to be, to even start off at that young age to be successful in life, to have some structure and some understanding authority and stuff like that. She had a lady that works at the school district that donated her a rug for her classroom. And I don't know if you've ever noticed the rugs, the prices of those rugs, but I could have bought darn near a new computer for the price of that rug. So, I mean, it's things like that people are just doing out of their own pocket. We had a Catholic priest that used to be that's from this area, but he's actually up in, I think, Kentucky now. For some reason, he apparently knows like Jay Leno and all these famous people. And so he actually contacted the school and was like, hey, have your teachers put together an Amazon wish list and let me send it out to the people that follow me on social media and all my contacts and stuff. And let's see what we can get you as far as like replacing stuff that teachers lost in their classrooms, not just like computer, not really computer stuff or anything like that. And so they're putting like rugs, bookshelves, things like that. And all of a sudden this guy drives this U-Haul truck down full of this stuff that people bought for us on Amazon, people that don't even know us from anybody. You hear stories about, and then it's happened to us. And it's kind of a unique thing. I know I sent you the picture of your actual church group down in our area working. I saw their van driving by. But the town in Louisiana where my grandparents are from, or my grandfather's from, they actually sponsored our elementary school, and they showed up with an 18-wheeler full of like these rolling cards full of school supplies, well, teacher supplies, like books, paper, notebooks, pens, staplers, stuff like that, that all these displaced teachers, that they can just roll around and bring all their supplies with us or with them. And so, I mean, it's just amazing to see like people just come together from all over the country. Things are just coming in from Amazon, like on a daily basis. We're getting stuff in from these wish lists or whatever. And so it's just amazing to see that kind of support from not only the community, but just from all over.
the world seems to get a lot smaller in situations like this.
It really does.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants to, someone wants to help out. And yeah, it was like, it was crazy. Like, I didn't even know that we had a team down there. And then it's like, then I found out, like, oh, we do have a team down there. Like, it's crazy. You're the first person who told me, like, well, I didn't really, I mean, that's what people do. Like, they want to serve, they want to help. Like, so, and kind of like retrospect, like, what, if this happened, like, now that you've kind of lived through this, like, would you do anything different preparation wise?
Preparation wise, I mean, as far as like, the things that we could afford to do. I mean, obviously, if you could, you'd have a data center like replicated offsite. I mean, and then basically you lose internet and connection to this one site, and basically everything comes back up. I don't know if y'all do a lot with like, from what I kind of gathered from listening to you and Fraser, I don't think y'all are doing a whole lot of stuff on site. But like, I'm running Active Directory and virtualization with VMware, and I have like an Equalogic Dell SAN with like a bunch of storage in it and stuff like that. And we have some crazy special education laws where we have to like monitor classrooms with like video recordings, and we have to keep that for 6 months and stuff like that. So I have all of this like internal infrastructure that I have to take care of, and it would just be perfect if I had just basically the whole thing replicated offsite. It would just be perfect if I could just afford to run it all offsite and not have anything here locally, and just basically set up like a site-to-site VPN connection to that offsite data center over like a gig connection. But you know, it's public education. There's only so much money to go around.
Yeah, I mean, even in private, like we're in that boat. Like there, I think that's just like an IT in general. There is like a would be perfect and what is realistic from a budgetary standpoint. It's tough. Like the public and private have just we have like the same problems, but in like different problems in a way. And I think it's in every like every department in every industry. There is like a like nice to have, and there's like a what we have to have. So like even things like what like I think of in terms of like facilities, like how they manage like our electrical operation at our offices. Like there's like, for me, like I just care that it works when I get there, but they're thinking like, gosh, this stuff is X amount of years old. We need to replace it all. Like they're the ones thinking like long-term and in depth, and how you balance that is hard. And like, you know, cause you obviously can do too much preparation, but, gosh, yeah, that is hard. It's like finding the balance of like what makes the most sense from an economical standpoint. But,
I think the most important thing is just make sure your backups are up to date and
test them. Like that's the thing. Like test those backups. Like it's not enough to have a backup, but like you have to verify it. Like that's the thing with the backups. Like you have to verify that they are working, and backup. Like
I actually use two offsite backups, and so I made sure they were both working.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Like that's honestly the best thing you can. The situation is like make sure, like it's one thing to like have to recover slowly. It's a whole another thing to like not be able to recover. Nobody's going to fault you for recovering slowly.
They'll just be grateful you get their day back.
Amen. So like as we kind of wrap up, any final like parting advice for someone else dealing with disaster preparation, disaster recovery?
I mean, I guess the main important thing is make sure that you have backups. In this situation, local backups aren't as important as offsite backups unless you can actually take your local backups with you. Because your local backups are in the same situation that your production gear is in, and so it's not going to really do you any good to really focus on local backups when it comes into like a situation like this. It's those offsite backups that you really want to be focused on. And if you're not running an offsite backup solution, you need to. In fact, bandwidth is so cheap. I actually, my main backup is my offsite backup, because, I mean, why spend the money to, because basically what I would have to do is just basically replicate my current environment in my same location just to be able to do the correct local backups. And so I just sort of mostly rely on my offsite backup. It's fast, it's quick. I mean, I can restore sometimes from my offsite backup a lot faster than I could pull it from like a tape drive or whatever you have running. And so I mean, so just make sure your backups are in order. Make sure that you have a plan in place. It may sound trivial or whatever, but it's probably a good idea to have a list of like all of your employees with emergency contact numbers, and then have a plan as like something happens, you call this person, and then that person calls two other people, and while you call the other people. And so just to kind of have something like that in place. It may seem trivial, but, you know, just stay in touch with each other. Me and my supervisor and the other guy that works with us, we all stayed basically in contact with you. I communicate with them at some point every single day. Just to see how they were doing. I was trapped in my house. I couldn't get out of my neighborhood because we were surrounded by water. They were trapped in their house, surrounded by water. Everybody's a little panicky, and so it's always good to just kind of stay in that communication with each other, just to make sure everybody stays calm. Make sure, let them know everything's going to be okay. If there's anything that we could do for them, we'll do it. Obviously, there's not too much I can do because I can't get out of my neighborhood. But I mean, it's little things like that that make a difference. I know that I communicated with more than just my work friends or whatever. I communicated with my other friends, and they've come back and told me that it's like, you know what? It really helped. I mean, you checking on us and making sure we're okay, and offering to help and do things like that. So, I mean, it's little things like that. But I mean, just have a plan, especially too if you're. If your student information system and your finance stuff is hosted on site, I know there's like really two big vendors here in Texas. One of them is actually called Texas. It's not spelled like Texas is normally spelled. But for the most part, they are all Texas is mostly hosted in their data center. I think as far as because we work with that through the regional service centers for the area, which Texas has 20 of them that service all the school districts in Texas. And so Texas is basically the Texas system software is basically ran through them. And so I don't know of any school districts that are hosting that locally on site. And if they are, they need to rethink that strategy, because it's not something you really want to host yourself, because it's kind of a nightmare. But the other big vendor in Texas, I think, is called Skyward. And even though that you can host it on site, Skyward does have, they do, I think, for free. If you need to, you can actually send your database to them, and they will host it on their cloud stuff for you until you actually get your stuff back up and going. And so if that is something that will pertain to you, make sure you contact your vendor and see if there's something in place that you could host it. Or if there's not, then you take it with you. I mean, because you do not want to lose your finance information or your student information system.
No, you do not. That's great. Simple advice. I think that would, that's like great advice.
Throw that puppy in the floorboard of your car and take it with you.
So, Matt, if people want to connect with you further, how can they get in touch with you via social media?
The best way is on Twitter, and my username is @twistofmatt. And I'd be glad to tell my story to anybody else or get more in depth or whatever we need to do. To get some more information out to anybody. But yeah, my DMs are open, as they say.
Well, Matt, thanks for joining us tonight. Like I just intrigued by, kind of your recovery process that I watched through social media. It was, not intriguing is the word, but like, it was just very interesting. Like, you know, it's wanting to see you guys kind of get back to normal. And so it was awesome. It's kind of awesome to see you guys on that path. So thanks for joining us for this episode of Out of School. If you want to rate us, you can do that on Apple Podcasts at itunes.com/out of school. Obviously, we appreciate if you tell your friends about the show. I am at Bradley Chambers on Twitter, and I am on the web at chambersdaily.com. We'll be back next episode. Me and Fraser will be back again. Thanks, everybody, for listening this week. We'll have some links to some of the things we talked about in the show notes at outofschool.net. But have a great week, everybody.